Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to another episode of Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. In today's episode, ICD-11 is coming, I continue my discussion with Mario Perez. During this episode, we speculate on when the United States will transition to ICD-11 and how it will change the landscape of medical coding, as it will definitely allow for more widespread use of automation in the world of coding. We wrap up our discussion talking about coding in CDI industries and how they're moving from task-based to knowledge-based roles, resulting in medical coders needing to elevate their skill sets to demonstrate value. And now here is part three of my interview with Mario Perez.
So we touched on ICD-11 like a little bit. So with ICD-11, so let me ask you this question first. When do you think, prediction here, I'm asking for prediction, when do you think the United States will adopt ICD-11?
We're talking about ICD-11, so once again is to understand what ICD-11 is and what it is not. It is completely going to be a game changer in the world. It already is, because it's not going to be based on a book. Like right now, I got a software for ICD-10, a grouper, and stuff like that. So why am I telling you this? I already could see issues with vendors. Well, it's going to happen to me as a vendor. We may not use your software. We may not need it. Why? Because it's a web-based service globally. So.
But we have our clinical modification. So would our clinical modifications screw us up and keep us reliant on software vendors?
Absolutely, then. And that's the whole issue when we clinically modify. And so the issue is when you start reading into this, and you can read this through the website of the International Federation of Health Information Management. It's a subset of AHIMA, right? The International Federation. And they do a great job of what's going on with ICD-11. And that's where I get a lot of my resources that is coming from the World Health Organization. So you already have other countries already adopted this. I mean, ICDE, it's going to be a service that you could use with any other, that you don't need the software. It's already going to be, it's already available. One of the things with this issue about when we're talking about ICD-10, it's used for mortality and morbidity. The United States always adopts mortality quicker. These are for what? Health registries such as cancer, right? So when ICD-10 came about, the mortality for ICD-10 in the United States was implemented in 1999. But for morbidity, for what we use disease and processes, that didn't come about till what? 2015. Because it literally took what? An act of Congress through the HIPAA regulations. Now, when we're talking about the ICD-10, in the United States, it was first talked about in 1989. And that's why Mario was talking about ICD-10 in the 90s. Remember, Stacy? And I was, oh, it's a coming, it's a coming. And it didn't happen till October 1st of 2015. It was supposed to be 2013, 2014, but then we had some backlash from other associations, and finally it came to fruition, a lot of training and things like that. Now, probably when we're talking about maybe the implementation of, when we're talking about for mortality statistics, these are used for nosologists that are using this the format for coding in regards to registries, right? For example, in ICD-10, it only took about 10 years for us to adapt it. So it was 1989.
You said only. It took us only 10 years.
for mortality. Imagine that, you know? And then what happens is here, the prediction is for mortality. They expect that perhaps because of the easy use of this code structure, which is completely different from ICD-10, they're going to scrap ICD-10, which was supposed to be expandable till the end of the world. Now they're going to, that's been scrapped because of what technology, so they could be better used throughout the world. They expect it no sooner than 2023, which is next year.
Please.
So the whole issue here is maybe 2023, maybe 2025.
Well, because I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm assuming this would have to go through the rulemaking process and go through Congress again. Like, yes, are we stuck in that same, you know, situation where they have to approve the official code set going, yes, isn't that going to come from them?
Well, for morbidity, you're absolutely right for coding. Remember, for the mortality, it's just a registry. So when we're
So two separate issues.
So when we're talking about mortality, that's a whole different thing for just statistical purposes to be able to compare oncology globally for research purposes and things like that, right? Morbidity is where we fall in, right? Is where we're talking about the diagnoses, right? The diagnosis coding that we use throughout in our country. But the problem is with that is that there's going to be a lot of copyrights in regards to if it's clinically modified, how this might impact the vendors, how will the government define this, if they're going to require us to do just ICD-11, if there's going to be no limitations to the clinical modifications be permitted? Because if it is, it just blows apart the comparison of the global structure, right? Now, there has to be revision then to what? To the HIPAA code sets that everybody has to be using this in these forms. And then also based on what? On the format to the changes in technology to allow these code sets to appear what? Well, right now nobody pulls up, but the format and the fields would have to be corrected, right? Just like we had to do when we changed the billing format, right? So I think those are going to be the ramifications for that. But one of the things is with the ICD-11 is also as well that it was really designed for better population health outcomes. It's web-based. But the thing is with that is rather than having a code set that you have to build on each code set, it's based on a completely different realm that coders are going to have to educate it. It is based basically on cluster code sets. Just to give you an example that I have here in regards to the code sets for a fracture. So a fracture in ICD-10 starts with an S code and it has left hip arthritis and things like that. And then we could add another extension for laterally and things like this. In ICD-11, you don't have combinations of extension. There's always going to be, for example, left means left anywhere in the body. It has its structure code already for left. The diagnosis of osteoarthritis has its diagnosis. The diagnosis of a femur has its own code set. And so what you have is a cluster of codes that are being built. So it's a completely different dynamic. So what the computer looks at from a web base, it looks at fracture. Femur brings in that cluster code. Left brings in that nomenclature. Brings in, if it's osteoarthritis, it brings it in as well. So it's all based on that. And it's very, very elongated. It's a completely web-based structure there. So it won't require the intervention of a coder to go there and actually code the case. That's going to be major implications. You ask me, when will that implemented here? Well, if it took 20 some odd years to put in ICD-10, right? We talked about 19.
Longer than that. I mean, I think there were initial talks like that could have been implemented in like the year 2000, but then we had Y2K to contend with, and then it took all those years.
It could be less, you know, it all depends, you know. But for example, you know, if you got, for example, if you got diabetes, right, in ICD-10, you got a code for that. Like, for example, it's almost like going back to ICD-9. In ICD-9, diabetes with ophthalmic manifestation, you have one code, 250.50 for diabetes, and then for ophthalmic, and then you had to describe, like, for example, the diabetic cataract, 366.41. Well, in ICD-10, we got one code. We got diabetic mellitus with diabetic cataract is E11.36. Well, in ICD-11, don't fall off your chairs, ladies and gentlemen. In ICD-11, you're going to have 9B10.21 and XKG-5A1111.
Wow. I had not looked at any codes yet in the code set.
I'm going to give you an example. So what does that mean? What is that cluster of codes? Where did it drive it from? Well, it picked up the 9B10.21 as what? Diabetic cataract. Then it picks up XKG for the what? The left eye. And then it picks up 5A11 type 2 diabetes mellitus. It treats every entity separately and it brings up that code. So you don't actually have to get a main term, subterm, third term, laterality, go to the tabular list and then pick up the laterality. And that's why it's web-based and the computer on artificial intelligence, left eye, diabetes mellitus, diabetic cataract, automatically looks for those clusters and just puts the code. That's why, now, that's how that happens in ICD-11. If we clinically modify things here, there's no need for that because we clinically modify things here because of certain diagnosis preps for capturing. So that's going to be the question, what's going to happen. But being web-based, you could have the software, you know, you're not dependent on any company to give you this. It's completely web-based. So you don't have to purchase something. You could be an independent contractor and work on it because automatically it's available for you and it codes it internationally. That's going to be a major change on how things get done electronically. With artificial intelligence, it's even there. It's going to be faster to compare statistics. And plus the fact is, it'll change the way that coders do their jobs. You know, this could be done what? Concurrently as a doctor is speaking, right, Stacy? I don't need to wait to
Right, it could be.
Now, mind you, this is only for diagnoses because ICD structure in the World Health Organization, it's only for diagnoses. It has nothing to do with procedural coding. We came up with our own procedural coding system in the United States because other countries use other algorithms for procedures. If politically things change in the country as to things have reimbursed, there may be changes to that, just like it happened with the implementation of the DRGs. But I think you can start to appreciate how artificial intelligence in the documentation of such diagnoses will allow the computer to automatically be able to assign these codes more efficiently without the intricacies of the coding conventions. I hate to say it, but that's where it's at. But it would add more consistency to the, as long, but once again, as we notice, it's not going to be take away HIM or coders because it's all based on what? At the end of the day, it's document. You know, if they document the right eye and that's incorrect, well, the computer just picked up right eye, didn't, you know? So that's where ICD-11 is. I have long expectation life in my family, so maybe I will get coded in I-11. Certainly you will, Stacy.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, but I don't know a lot about ICD-11. I've heard about it in like rumblings, but I was reading like a little bit about it, just like some basic facts. And so based on what you were telling me, what you just said, it makes sense because I was reading that they expect training time to be minimal going to ICD-11. And I'm like, really? I'm like, why is it so different that training time would be minimal? And you just explained it. And so it sounds to me like it will actually make coding itself easier. Like even if we have our clinical modification, that we wouldn't have the excess of guidelines that we have now. Is that what I'm kind of hearing from what you're saying, where it even simplifies those official coding guidelines that we have? Yes, it has the potential for that.
It does, because based on our coding structure right now with the clinical modifications, we have to follow all of these inclusions, exclusions, the coding conventions, and it's far more user-friendly based on my reading. And based on this, it really reduces the need for clinical modifications. And that's the whole concept of that.
Hope the U.S. doesn't screw it up and they leave it alone.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that, for example, is that what they use it for that I was reading here, that ICD-11 allows for multiple applications to meet the healthcare system's priorities. For example, it automatically would include mortality, morbidity, primary care reporting, clinical recording, research, patient safety, antimicrobial resistance, epidemiology, population health, health system performance. So instead of having to use all of the I-10 information and have to reinterpret in another database, this database is automatically available to the facilities to report out. So I see, according to the better coding quality that it says, the coding can be done as simple coding can be done as well as complex. As well. And the new coding structure allows for a greater flexibility of application than in previous versions. So healthcare conditions can be described in any level of detail by what? Combining the codes. Because right now you're restricted to what? The expansion of that specific chapter code. Because you well know, you know, I'm not being facetious or being funny. I mean, when we created from I-9 to I-10, you know, 75,000 plus codes. And still we were missing availability and code, some body structures, and other stuff we didn't have a diagnosis. And then you got to come up with something else. This gives you the opportunity to cluster these codes appropriately based on the description of the diagnosis. So it's interesting as you're reading through this, for those that are interested, I would recommend that you go into the World Health Organization, look at I-11. The International Federation of Health Information Management Association offers a lot of links. You don't have to even be a member of them, but they offer you some nice PowerPoints that you could be discussing about how these may be, what the impact is. It's interesting to note that in my last article that I was reading, Kuwait, for example, already implemented I-11 and developed an abstract paper already at their experiences of how their transition went. And it's interesting how there was minimal training to the to coders that are looking at this information, really. And really to the physicians, it really didn't make much of an impact at all, because obviously, you know, the clinical documentation improvement or integrity is based on specificity. But for them, it was seamless in regards to how this the transition went. So looks like, you know, and it's interesting when you read through this, that if this is implemented, there won't be a need for any other revisions forthcoming. So,
yeah, that's what it sounds like, that's kind of like, you know, you've arrived. That's the holy grail, like with this system, that it has the ability to capture everything.
I guess as new diagnoses are coming about, you know, you would be able to expand or create codes for that. I would imagine that.
Yeah, correct. Just like ICD-10 has been expandable, and that was how they touted it. It's expandable. You can always add new codes, the same thing. But the actual like big like transition, this is kind of like, I feel like the final big transition, at least for a while, because of the technology piece of it. So I'm actually excited for it, because I got to be honest, I hate diagnosis coding. I don't like it when I have to do a lot of it. And I didn't like moving from ICD-9 to ICD-10 because I had so many I-9 codes memorized. I never had to look at a book. And now with ICD-10, I'm constantly having to look up codes and it drives me crazy. So I like the technology aspect of that, where, again, when you're trying to look up a code and you're going multiple places to look it up, that can be a time-consuming thing, because I'm still book-based coder. I use my hard copy book. I also, if I use software, it's book-based software. I don't use any logic-based. So I'm still old school like that. So I'm interested to see what that's going to look like with the way you just described it, because I hadn't really delved into it yet. I was kind of like, you know what? That's a long way off. I'm not going to worry about it. The client I was working with, they asked me about it, the software company. They're like, oh, ICD-11, that's coming into effect in the world, you know, January 2022. I'm like, in the States? I'm like, yeah, it might take 10 years. I'm like, let's not, because they're building a product for the States. That is their target audience. And I'm like, we don't need to talk about that right now in the United States. I'm like, let's focus on developing this. And then I feel like, based on what you said, when the US flips the switch to I-11, any technology that's already existing in that AI space, that will make it even better when I-11 is introduced.
Well, that was the whole idea. It's like I said, it's WebWave. It minimizes any type of local software. So I don't know what vendors are going, you know, it might put vendors out of business. I don't know.
You still have other uses of software. And so here's the thing. So we know, especially outpatient, CPT, okay? So we know that PCS has the ability to replace CPT, but that will never happen because of politics. The American Medical Association owns CPT and probably makes hundreds of millions of dollars off of CPT with all the licensing and royalties. Sure. I have to pay them money. That will never go away. So, and that, again, AMA wants to make their money from the software vendors. So there's always a need for software. It'll be interesting to see how the I-11 piece fits in to software. I mean, if you just need access to the diagnosis code set, then yeah, you really don't have to purchase anything at all. If, you know, depending upon what your job entails. And I know a lot of independent coders would love that. Let's say if you're doing HCC coding, okay, and you're interested in diagnosis coding, why do you need all these elaborate software?
I'll take back about the vendors, because once again, this is only about the diagnosis coding. And here we code for procedures. So we're still going to need the software for PCS coding. And obviously the CPT coding is very important for pro fee, professional billing, as well as for the other services that require CPT coding for the outpatient as well. So we're still going to have that. But from a diagnosis perspective, you're not going to need. And then again, obviously, I think what's going to be important here in the United States, if we don't clinically modify, you know, you're still going to have software from the coding perspective, these resources that are available to coders, whether they're going to be standalone or whatever it is, obviously it's going to really improve. And that's, I think, one of the, when we're talking about, we started talking at the beginning of our session about how companies are being acquired by bigger companies. We talked J.A. Thomas, for example. moving to Nuance and Nuance to Microsoft. Well, what did Microsoft interest in? Why did they purchase Nuance for about $19 billion? Now, that's, you know, public information. I'm not, and by the way, you know, I didn't get a cut out of that. But anyway, what's interesting to note, if you read why Microsoft wanted to move into that, is because of the artificial intelligence that Nuance has developed in regards to radiology, Stacy, that you talked about,
right?
The technology for natural language processing, and they wanted to get into that. The fact is that Nuance is not, Microsoft is not the only entity that's once again maybe into the healthcare arena or the electronic health record as well, as that happens. So all of these private entities, global entities that are getting about, I mean, you got the fact is that most of, for example, Nuance products for radiology are used with over 85% of providers use that type of technology that's out there as well. So now you're talking about all of this and transposing it to maybe the CDI world as well and things like that. But it's all based on the technology perspective. But I think there's still going to be individuals, obviously, that need to work either upfront line to be contributors to the development of the artificial intelligence, such as we talked about clinical annotations. Many consultants that were doing consulting services about teaching CDI and things like that, since the world has become remote, a lot of this now with technology, you could clip on your CDI application. You know what? I need to brush up on my sepsis or encephalopathy documentation opportunities. You click on the video and it gives you an infomercial on what you need to look for. You don't need a Mario Perez to come over in a tie and fly over, you know, and tell you this information. So what has transpired with the consulting services is now they're becoming more and more the clinical annotators, assisting the IT individuals who are programming, creating these codes, but assisting the clinical nomenclature that drives correct what diagnosis, either the correct or identifying the right opportunity. And it requires that type of team to look at. Obviously, when the program is implemented, you begin to get, you know, maybe some bugs. They still have to be ironed out. And that's why you need these people that are working now instead of at the facility sites. Now they're working into the dynamics of technology, working remotely anywhere, any place. And that's where I see the future of the health information management technology person that becomes involved in the development of the clinical architecture that drives those outcomes. Knowing that, you need to prepare yourself by looking at the clinical aspects, but also learning about some of the technology, IT, about how things are being programmed and getting a little bit out of the box. Obviously, during my career time, we didn't even have computers, so there was no computer classes. I think I took an IBM class, and it was about a punch card, and that was about it. But things have changed now in regards to, and so you raised a very valid point at some time during our conversation, Stacy, about what is academia in the curricula preparing the HIM technology, and if there is deficiency on that, do they still exist advisory boards of bringing people who are working in the field, how this technology is being worked out? Or do we see HIM being rolled into HIT programs? I saw that, for example, in South Florida. FIU does not have anymore an HIM or HIA program. That was usurped into Miami-Dade Community College. Well, not community colleges, Miami-Dade, it's a four-year college. You have that. But then, you know, what is the curricula exist? Are you still teaching people how to look up a code in a code book or through, you know, the computer? Good to know it, but that's not going to be the test. You need to be forward so that when you are prepared to come into the workforce, what are you offering? And a lot of it is understanding what is the impact of your work. You're not going to be doing it. You might be telling people this is the way you need to do it. So people are going to be paying you for what you know, not for exactly for what you do, you know? It's the old story of the, and I know we've talked aloud here, so, you know, it's the old little joke about, you know, there was this guy who had a technology firm, his computer went down. And so he calls the IT person, and the IT person says, yeah, what's the problem? He says, you know, well, my computer doesn't work. And he says, okay, well, let me see what happens here. He says, well, it's going to be $1,000. And the owner says of the company, okay, fine, $1,000, no problem. So the guy opens up the computer, looks at it, takes a screwdriver, tightens up a screw, and closes it up. Less than 1 minute. And the guy says, I'm not going to pay you $1,000. Why should I? And the guy, you know, and so the guy goes and invoices the owner for $1,000. And the owner writes him an email, says, why should I pay you $1,000 for 1 minute's worth of time? The guy writes back, you're not paying me for my time. You're paying me because I knew which screw to tighten up.
Exactly.
So yes. I leave you with that thought, ladies and gentlemen, because it's not, you know, we're used to how many records did I code in a day? Five. How many records did I review? This is no, it's paying me for what you know, because the computer is going to be doing it for me. So you're going to know exactly for what I know what needs to happen so we get the outcomes that we all need, whether it be from a regulatory, coding, clinical, financial, patient safety, patient quality, patient consumerism, patient advocacy, you name it. We hit on all of those points. And when somebody's going out there for an interview of what you bring to the table, you should mention these things, because I am the individual who can look at the spectrum of you're going to pay me for what the impact is on decisions that you're going to make and how it is going to impact on that. Gone are the days of the widget. You're going to pay me for how many widgets I make, or the Ford Ascendry line. You know, it was great back then when Mara used to go to a hospital and code ER records for $1 a record. I made a lot of money. It was the same old diagnosis, abdominal pain, chest pain. It was like, you know, no longer exists, no longer requires. And obviously coding is far more advanced than it is. So that's how I think people should be looking at sort of out there of what, how you sell yourself in many instances and how
technology is changing. Yeah, we're getting away from roles being task-based and then more into about knowledge and like knowledge oriented and that level of expertise. So that's why I always tell people, I mean, you need to look at how you can step up your game, like knowledge, and improve yourself to work at a higher level. You know, me personally, I hate mundane, tedious tasks. And when I have to do them, it drives me nuts. And sometimes you can't avoid them. And I'm like, if I could, like, you know, automate a lot of things, I would be thrilled if I didn't have to do these. And so I feel, again, not that the coding, not because coders are afraid. You see it all the time on social media. I know you don't participate on social media. It's like not your thing. When I'm out there in the different groups, coders are afraid. Hey, I'm new to this field. I'm just coming into the coding profession. I see what's happening with technology. I'm afraid that there aren't going to be any jobs for me. Like, what do? I feel like I've wasted my time. And I try to tell them, I'm like, look, these changes are a long way off. We've started to adopt technology. We're moving this direction, but it takes time before the technology is going to replace the human. Now, with artificial intelligence, what we are doing as those humans working with these software companies, I'm doing it, other people are doing it. You talk about the roles there for coders. We are training the software to do what we do. That is our job. Eventually, the software is going to take over things that we do, and we're never going to have to look at them again. So absolutely. I think I mentioned earlier, like those lower level positions will go away, but that knowledge, you just take that knowledge and you put it into other aspects. Like a lot of people go to school with the idea, I'm going to come out and I'm going to be a production coder. And I'm going to sit at my desk and I'm going to code for 40 hours a week, however many records are expected of me. And that's going to be my job. And that eventually over time, it's not going to be that as much. That will still exist for a while, a very long while, because you have to figure adopting technology is always very slow. Even when it's available, we've seen it's very slow to be implemented. You have providers across the spectrum where you have larger providers who see the ROI, they will invest in it. The smaller providers don't have the ability. They're always lagging behind. So I don't even see, like, in my lifetime that those jobs are going to decrease a lot, at least while I'm still working for the next 20 years. I don't see a dramatic decrease, but people who want to be in it long term have to start thinking strategically how to bring those other skill sets, how to improve upon what they already have if they want to keep working. Because if you're in your 20s starting out in this profession, you have to be thinking about that. I don't worry about it so much, although I feel I found like a good, you know, niche that I do well in. But some days I feel like I'm boxed in and I'm stuck and I need to diversify and do something else. Because what if something happens here and that goes down and it goes away for whatever reason? We don't know what's going to happen in the future. COVID, we didn't know what was going to happen. Coders were out of work and being furloughed and laid off. And what the heck do you do when the work isn't there? So
you're absolutely right, Stacey. And it's really, and sometimes making the table yourself or inviting yourself to the table or really addressing it's like when I said, it's doing getting out there and looking at what's out there. What is the need? What are they asking for? It's like, I like to share something with you all. As I scan what's out there, you know, all of these entities that are out there looking for now for coding, for HCCs and stuff like that. It's interesting when you read the description, able to code with ICD-9. I made a note of that company.
Yes, I see that stuff sometimes.
And I'm going to give them a call that says, this is a perfect company who maybe doesn't know what the heck they're doing. And they don't even know what it is. And you could come in there and sell yourself. And it's a game changer. They'll be happy to have you there. It's really, and you just can't sit waiting for somebody to happen to you. You got to be proactive and where to be looking at this. And you're absolutely right. Like I said, there's still, when I look at it, and Stacey, I don't know if this still happens, but it used to be that there was a lot of billing, coding, educations, technical schools. I don't know if they still that. Oh, they still do that. I think they do because they're asking because it's what a fast course, and they want people to do that task as well. And so people, you're absolutely right. I'm going into academia. So if you're going to academia with a health information, it's really what the curricula has and what foundation, but you got to ask more of your educators. You got to bring, are they bringing in guest speakers that can talk to individuals about what is going on? How would you pivot yourself to start getting involved now, even as a student? Look, I was already working, but I then became a student of HIM, so I already was in the pot, whether I want it really or not. So I knew what was going on working in that facility. Very different from coming in right out of high school, going to health information management, and then say, okay, where do I begin? Well, where do you begin then? Immediately then that I would recommend get involved with your local association. And ask, I want a mentor. And don't wait for a mentor to call you or somebody that says, hey, I'm, you know, so-and-so, I was referred. I'd like it. I says, okay, let's go out for coffee. Let's see if you're worth being mentored. I don't know. You got to, and that's important. But you got to take that initiative like I believe you did and like I did. I didn't wait around. Okay, I got pretty good coding at cancer. And I says, you know what? There's more to coding than cancer in this coding book. And then that's why I says, I got to go out there and say, well, have you ever coded cardiology? And I said, no, but if you give me a chance, I'll learn it. And besides, I don't see anybody, you know, coming here and coding for $3 an hour. Right? So I took it.
Yeah. And every job that I ever had, when something new came up, a new opportunity, I volunteered to learn the new thing
too.
And then train other people. And I wasn't getting paid in the moment because people think like, well, I should be getting paid for this.
Well,
sometimes you suck it up and you do it for the experience and the knowledge. And then the pay comes later because you have the skill sets. You have to think like longer term. Like I always, like I get bored easily. I always wanted to do new things. So coming into HIM early when it was very paper-based and all of that, when we started slowly moving into technology, I was the young person in the department. I'm 19 years old, 20 years old, working with older people. I'm the one who's like learning the technology. I'm doing the document imaging, the scanning, learning the system, the new billing system. And I'm helping them troubleshoot and teach them because they didn't understand it. And those skills just serve you like well as you move forward, the more systems that you know, that you learn.
You know,
and so I always, and then whenever I would ask for raises, I would get them because I was showing initiative. Mm-hmm. I always got pay increases above and beyond. So people need to, I don't know if they're afraid to or if they don't want to, but like what it is, but I feel like people just kind of take a back seat and wait for things to kind of happen when they really could be out making things happen. Networking is huge. Volunteering is huge in the association. And I actually did a podcast yes. episode last year about the benefits of volunteering. That was the least popular podcast episode that I did. It's like barely been listened to, which tells me that people have like no interest in that. And I'm like, I don't think you fully comprehend the professional benefits of serving like that. Like I can remember, I guess I didn't fully realize it when I started doing it until this goes to when I had my first year, I was serving as a committee chair. And again, this is when you were on the board of FHIMA and I was selected to be the fire committee chair. Like back then we had the fire committee, find, inspire, recruit, educate the new professionals. Yeah. And I remember I came to the leadership conference and I had done this presentation for everybody at leadership conference where I did like that SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and did my presentation. And you all at the board level were like, oh my gosh, like where did she come from? And like, what is this? And then I remember people on the board said to me, if you ever need a job, please come see me because they saw what I brought to the table as a volunteer. If you're doing that as a volunteer, how much more are you going to bring to the table as a paid employee? I mean,
you were
great
really,
you were
really into it. And that shows whether the information was correct or not incorrect, not even the content. The fact is how you put it together. So it shows the initiative of bringing forth information that you're bringing forth in regards to a concept or bringing or selling an idea. And that's why I tell, you know, students, once again, is that I'm fortunate that I was part of seeing the onion grow. Now you got the onion, which is a pretty big onion, and then there's so many layers that it's very hard to comprehend because you were not part of that history. You're coming fresh into this. But the good thing about it is that onion never had the artificial intelligence. It was not part of technology, you know? And so I think what's important here, now you work in, well, either now remotely, you have cross generations working together, right? And so I've seen where in the firm where I was working at, that at one point, you know, I depended on the 25-year-olds to help me with some of this, Microsoft Teams spreadsheets or whatever that was all very computerized or whatever. I didn't have a problem for asking, you know, hey, you know what? I want you to help me with that. But then again, you know what? Why don't you just go ahead and we hire somebody to do it because that's not my cup of tea. I'm going to tell you what I need. I want the outcome. But some people, asking for help is not a bad thing. I don't care what it, and learning from each other. What I think it's important is that people, students, if you're learning a task, I understand, but in curricula, we should have what I call, when back in the days, I never had a multiple choice test. It was based on analysis, comparing, contrasting, and writing essays. Do you understand the dynamics of our healthcare system in America? Do you understand the ramifications of your job when you're talking about third-party payer payments? You understand the dynamics of clinical decision making as it impacts health information technology. I don't want a multiple choice, yes, no, no. Tell me about it. Do we teach patient safety parameters, quality, the impact? All of these issues, which when you understand the foundational concepts, now when you see a computer that's telling you SOIRM, you know what the heck it means, what the implications are. Do the students know that? Because that's what entities are looking for. So well, you're in an interview, you know, you got to turn it around. And nowadays, you know, particularly, and I see, Stacey, that a lot of them are entry level. So maybe you're not working or maybe you are, but if it's an entry level position, that's going to get you into, you know, willing to learn or something like that. That's the job that you need to be looking for if you know zilch. if your expectations are to go to school, I'm not knocking education, but then go ahead and get your master's and then expect that they're going to hire you and be the administrative director over a facility without any experience, it ain't going to happen.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I've seen many a changes, and I lived in corporate America many years, and I've seen many CEO or many or CFOs or COOs come and go. And some of them came and they destroyed morale. They didn't know. They had their concepts that they learned somewhere in management, Masters 101, all very pretty. And I'm thinking, this is all blah, blah, blah. And lo and behold. And I had to stick out with it. You know, okay, you want to try it out? Try it out. But, you know, people would tell me, oh, Mario, why are you so negative? And I says, I'm not negative. I'm just saying, why fix something that's not broken? If you can tell me that although it's not broken and we could move from here to there and make it better, I'm all for it. But I don't go into it blindly. If it's a proven track record and it's not going to impact anything, but unfortunately, people come in, oh, it's time for a change. And I says, oh, no, Mario's not for change. I'm all for change, but there's good change and there's bad change. And I've seen it all. And so how have I been able to survive with my big mouth, Stacy, is because I've always had the integrity, spoken up. And when I speak up, I'll say I speak up and I'll take the lead. I'll chair the committee. And you will join me. I'm not asking for volunteers. You've been elected. And we're gonna do this together. But to sit there and create, and within the corporations, I was the only HIMer in the clinical CDI world. Always respected the skill set, but of the clinical parameters, because that was not my foundation. But I made sure that they respected my foundations as well. They didn't know what they didn't know.
I feel like you were like a trailblazer in CDI. Going back to, you were in CDI before CDI was cool and it was the buzzword. And you did so much to elevate how HIM professionals are viewed in CDI.
Exactly, because everybody thinks HIM is a coding. Oh, anybody could code. Anybody could get a code there in the book or whatever, because that it's how you sell yourself. It's how you really present yourself in a way, in a very respectful way, and how you really cut. Because every time I've been many a place as a consultant, you would go into the hospital and you had the coders and the CDI, and it was like the Hatfields and the McCoys. And so I says, okay, now I got to put on my psychology hat here. And why are we not, we're adults here, but we have to set the foundation that at the end of the day, you know, well, we got to respect each other's skill set and understanding that sometimes it's better to be kind in life than that you want to be right. Because sometimes doesn't work out that way. And it's a give and take situation. And coding, like I said, a lot of times there's a subjectivity. You have subjectivity from a clinical perspective, and you have subjectivity sometimes as to the coding world as well. I mean, because of what? The regulations. Like I always said, chief reason for admission. Well, based on whose criteria? What makes it that, you know? And so what we're talking about is the dynamics of working there. But all of that is getting really more and more apart because artificial is eliminating that social interaction that we had before. AI now sets those parameters, I believe, in many instances, natural language processing. And you still need to have those processes. But I believe, you know, as more and more AI becomes involved, you got to be looking at all the other dynamics for an HIM professional coming into this world. Where is my skill set impact with it? And it's impacted across the spectrum of healthcare. But don't expect to come out with a master's degree in health information management or technology or whatever it is, and expect without any experience to come into a leadership role. It could happen, but without experience, I doubt it, because you might be very good at academia. But once you get into a hospital setting or a corporate setting, do you have the school of hard knocks to deal with the politics? I mean, very, very, very interesting concept when you're dealing with that. And so how do you learn a little bit of that, about that? Well, if you're a student, get involved in your association, step up and become part of the board, run for an office. Okay, run for something that you think you can do. And kind of, is it going to require time? Yes. It's going to require effort? Yes. But you'll have a wonderful experience on how to deal with other individuals, how to bring in concepts that may be sort of maybe not as popular, or they may be new, or in dealing with cross generations. You know, my generation, basically, I'll say, well, no, prove it to me. And you want to, and the other young generation, well, let's do it. And let's see what happens. Well, where do we come to a happy medium and learning in that perspective? That is where you are. Now, if you're already working in a world where you are already working in the healthcare settings, then you have a little bit of more leeway. Then I would say is, if you're studying HIM and you're working in a different department of a hospital, then introduce yourself to the individuals, to the AVP of revenue management, of getting yourself involved, becoming a volunteer into a hospital, joining some committees as a participant, to learn what goes on with case management that are speaking with the CDI and those things. If you don't invite yourself to the party, nobody's going to invite you, or create your own party is what I'm saying. That's extremely important. I recall many instances that they asked me the personality of a coder, and they always said, oh, coders are so introverted. They like to work by themselves in a cubicle and not speak to anybody and stuff like that. I says, well, I must be the oddball here, because I don't want to be in a cubicle. I love being up on the floor. Every time they'd see me coming, the doctor would be heading down the hallway trying to avoid me. I says, I found you, you know? I need to speak to you. I would never say, I need to tell, you know, I would say, I need your help. I need you to educate me. They love that. I knew what I wanted, but it was a way to defer to their ego, whatever it takes. It's learning those politics of your doing. Nowadays, maybe not so, because now you have technology, and where everything is going to be an email, very impersonal, or you're going to be following up with that as well. We live in that technology because most of your healthcare providers, from what I see, is they're used to the technology. So I don't think that social dynamic is going to be such an impetus or a barrier for those that you are in the field right now. It's part of your everyday living in regards to what you do, but you still are going to have to develop those contacts. And being remote is saying, well, if I'm studying this or whatever, getting involved. And I think getting involved in associations, you begin to learn, and introducing yourself, I think it's important. There's another Sicilian proverb: he who has a godfather or godmother gets baptized. What does that mean?
I've never heard that before. I like that.
Well, what that actually means is, I don't care how good anybody is. We all think we're the best. Somebody at the end is always going to give you that first push. Somebody's going to help you get there or set you off, and is what you need. I've set many of people off in their path. I says, this is the path. These are the directions. Well, now this is the GPS. Go for it. You fall, give me a call, whatever. But you're going to do it. And I've seen many a student become what? Company owners such as yourself. I've seen them become now HIM directors, consultants, globetrotting. Some of them were even my own customers. They became my boss and I became their vendor. Very proud of that, to see how people have progressed. And other people never made it, never saw them. Maybe they, and that happens in life, is what you want out of it. But you got to move forward and get involved. And most of the people that I've seen doing that were not the introverts that people said the HIMers were. They were extroverted, meaning they got to put themselves out there. Those are the higher leadership positions if that's what you aspire to do. However, for those of you that are not what they call me and my family, the social butterfly, okay, that's fine. They're analysts that you could work in the technology, clinical annotations. They tell you this is what we need, but then you better make sure that you, instead of having the political savvy, have the clinical regulatory savvy in your brain, because yours is going to be basically brain power. Some people don't want to go into management. Not the easiest thing to manage 100 people, 100 consultant. I did it. Whatever, not a problem. Because most of my life was dealing with the personalities, this and that, and issues. But when I was doing actually the clinical concept and thing like that, you have to know exactly. Because then eventually you start out and you want to do those. Basically, you want to be basically in the background. If eventually you have positions to evolve into a higher leadership position, you're going to have a foundation that makes you a better leader because you know what it takes to do. You know what resources you know. Because the best job in the world, the best director that I was the best director because I had the best and more intelligent people working in my team. They made me look good.
Yes, that makes all of the difference to have people.
My job was to put down obstacles, allow things to happen, set the plan, and set them in motion. But no man or no woman is independent and does it on their own. And that's why I had many people help me throughout my career and had many people give me the chance. My first chance was nobody, they were looking for a coding job there. And I wouldn't get it. I was working in the business office where I wanted to move on to another facility. And I forget. And I'll never forget. I would go back. The job wasn't filled up. And one time I said, what is the problem? Give me 90 days. If I don't make it, I don't make it, then we're done.
That concludes part 3 of my interview with Mario Perez. In the next episode with Mario, we will briefly chat about how to build new skills and how networking can be of benefit to your career. But we're going to spend a good portion of time on Mario's most embarrassing moments. He actually had several to share, and I had to mute myself to keep my laughter from interrupting him. I couldn't stop laughing. I was laughing so hard. You definitely won't want to miss the laughs we share in part 4. And coming soon, I'll be releasing an interview with Eric Rubenstein of Advise Health. Eric is a former OIG agent who has a wealth of knowledge and great stories to share. As always, I want to thank all of my listeners. If you are loving the podcast and listen on Apple, please give a 5-star rating. And also, as always, please, please, please share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. If you have feedback you'd like to share on an episode or a topic suggestion, please send an email to podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com. Thanks again for tuning in and have an amazing week.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx, Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.